Sorry, could we go over that again? I'm awfully sorry. Mm-hmm. It was a terrace house on the corner of Brunswick Square, and it had sort of about four stories.
Yes. So. And it was used as one big room was used on the ground floor, was used as a public restaurant, and in the daytime. I think it was only for midday meals, because the rest of the place was more of a restaurant for the members, or the students that came in, teas and suppers and breakfast in the morning. Then we had...
And then the kitchen's in the basement.
Kitchen's in the
and
basement.
A few rooms to sleep in.
A few odd rooms in there, yeah. In case there was an overflow or something, yeah. You see. Yeah. And upstairs more was Miss Reeve's room and other... guest rooms who pay perhaps a bit more for bigger rooms, you see, they varied according to the size. The younger students paid less for the higher still, I suppose. I don't know how many floors.
And then there were servants or...
Well, a few servants, yes. There, yes. Yes. And then we had Davies in.
Did you? Yes.
But then clean.
You'd have the meetings in the dining room part,
meetings
would you?
Meetings would always be in the dining room because that was the biggest room of the whole place.
And Miss Reeves ran the whole thing, did she?
Yes, she saw to the catering and the running of it and arranged meetings and that. Yeah. And of course a lot of meetings went on when Mrs. Despard wasn't in England, you see. They went on by other people, you see.
She had a room there, Mrs. Despard had a room there.
Well, not as a permanent one, I don't think. But it was hers, but it was used for other people if she wasn't there.
Yes. Yes.
Miss Reeves sort of shift them round.
Yes.
But that was
so it was partly a sort of public restaurant, partly a club. Partly a hotel, really. I mean, it was a mixture of all
that. Well, it is. I suppose it was really they called it the Minerva Club, run by the WVS, you see,
WFL. Yes. Well, but what went on there, then, really? You just had a lot of meetings in the evenings, were there? And,
I think so. I don't know of anything else, really.
It was really... And presumably you could look at magazines and newspapers.
Well, there was this other sitting room the other side, a smaller room. And there was books and magazines and desks for people to write letters and that quiet room sort of thing, you know.
So it really was a women's club, really?
Yes, it was a club.
Yes. One thing I want to ask you, you know better than anybody else, was Mrs. Despard good with children, do you think? I mean,
oh, yes. I know her, when she had her mother's meeting, some of the mothers had brought their tiny babies in their arms. And I know one occasion the child cried and cried and cried. And they couldn't hear her, what they were saying, and they kept worrying and thought they were going. And the mother got up with the child to go, and she said, oh, don't go, mother. She said, give the baby to me. And she'd have the baby in her arms, and within 10 minutes that baby would be quite calm. There was something electric about her.
And she was good with you, was she?
Yes, she was very good with me like that. Of course, I don't know, as a baby, I can't remember.
No.
But I should imagine I would be, because...
But could you talk to her, you know, as a child, if you had problems and things, would she be good to listen to you? I mean...
I expect so, because I can only remember speaking to Mamie like that, you see.
Yes, I see, she was really your...
Because, you see, I could speak to her, but she was never very much with me.
No, I understand.
You see, and when she was home, she was usually rather busy.
I understand.
Writing for the next lecture, or arranging for another meeting, or something like that, you see.
Yes. Yes.
But she would always listen to me.
Yes, yes. But she was really a sort of like a fairy godmother in a way, wasn't she?
In
she
a
was
way,
rather distant
yes,
from
yes.
it.
Yes, and yet, another time she would be advising me how to do things. She did.
Did she?
Yes. She taught me, I think, a most lovely motto, and I've tried to live through it. It said, I think that's a philosophy too. I think it's one of the
philosophical. Yes.
Recitations, or whatever they call them. And it's, I am a link in the golden chain of love that stretches round the world. I must keep my link bright and strong, so I will try and keep... I must keep my link bright and strong, so I will...
Not right. So I see we can find it.
Commons. I used to wait in the lobby hours, and I remember once I'd come up from the country and I had a collie dog, and I had to go wait there to get home, you see. I don't know where Miss Madison was, I suppose she was there with her. Mm. I was taken there anyway, somebody, one of the maids or something, met or something of the train, and I got this collie dog with me, and I had to walk up and down the log and give it quiet. And there was I, a child with a dog. I just remember these men in there, and there were some judges there with their gowns on, you know, or domes or something, and they got these black gowns on. No, they were judges with the wigs, and they kept looking at me like this, what's all that doing? Well, I was going to take that up as a witness, I think, in the Commons. Oh dear. And I've been down, not down a coal mine, I've been to the shaft of a coal mine.
She encouraged you to do that, did she?
Well, you see, yes, she used to, in my holidays, wherever she went, I went.
Did you?
And if she was in England. And I must say that she taught me more than any school taught me. She's taken me, well, I've got it all down here, I am.
See if you...
In the island. So she arranged for a mass to be given on the Sunday in the hall for elderly and small children, so they would not have to walk so far and in such a dangerous road as the main Nine Elms Lane. There was also a maternity basket ready for emergencies in case wanted any time, night or day. Did I say about the infant school?
No.
There was an infant school in Ponting Road, the headmistress being a Miss Cox, who became very interested in Mrs. Despard's work and wanted improvements made in the school, in her school. So they worked together to get the council to alter the desks the children sat in. They were in tears, raising from the floor very steeply with iron edges. These they often fell on and injured themselves so often they had to come to the clinic. So Mrs. Despard had a very, Also, Mrs. Despard had the very small children of about 3 to 4 years old put in a class where they sat with little tables and chairs. The tables were turned upside down on the floor and canvas hammocks made by rings sewn on the corners of the canvas to fix onto the legs so these babies could sleep after dinner midday, which was given at the school. She was 36 years living at 2 Curry Street, working to help to improve the lives of the people in the island. Now there's a bit here out of her work that I came up against while with her. She had been a great fighter with many other conditions from the eyes of others.
She had been a great fighter with many others to better conditions for the lives of humans. She visited prisons, I going with her. I would be on holiday from school or later on weekends off from my nursing. I would always go to meet her if I could. She took me to coal shafts where she would go to a mine with a photographer to take photos of people and things she wanted photos of to show MP at different meetings or in the lobby of the House of Commons. I sat for quite a long time waiting for her while she went to see a certain MP on a subject. Fire stations, horses were used in those days, dockyards, gasworks.
I have
even been right up a crane with a collecting box to get the driver to give me something for the settlement.
Yes.
As a young child, before I was old enough to go to boarding school, I went with her on her parades through London in a van or cart. I stood in a coal cart at Speaker's Corner and sat on the lion's backs in Trafalgar Square. She travelled about seeing factories, shipyards, etc. Once I was taken to a factory near my school in Yorkshire,
where girls and boys of 11 and 12 years were working. The girls were sitting on the floor, plucking rags to make into pulp for wallpaper and lino.
Yes, that impressed me tremendously.
This impressed me very much, as I was about their age at the time. She had a country house at Oxshott, Surrey, where she would go for a rest and write her memories and memoirs. And do her gardening, of which she was very good. Having lived for many years out east, she returned with the idea of the eastern food and clothes. So she became a vegetarian and also never wore a hat again, always a mantilla. Her mantillas were made in Spain and sent over here, her sandals from India, until she couldn't get them over. So she got a shoemaker in Oxshott by the name of Mr. Penfold to make some for her. He made his own style. They were thin strips of leather, plaited across the arch of the foot, and a wicker, is it?
Wider piece. Piece.
Over the big toe, with a wide piece round the heel at the back. I've never seen any like them since. When she was 86, she went on a delegation to Russia to see how it was advancing under the new communist rule. I went with some others to see her off on the Russian boat, and we were allowed over it before it sailed.
Lovely boat.
Was it? While I was at boarding school, she moved to Ireland to help in the depression over there, but she still kept her eye on the Despard house by coming over every now and again. She bought a large house in Clonskee. Yes.
It was a Clonskee castle, just outside Dublin.
Yes, which had quite a lot of land attached. This she had turned into fruit fields, and the stable and outer houses were made into a factory where the jam was made, besides Irish lace and needlework to employ men and women. She made a friend and partner of the firm, with the widowed
Madame Gone McBride,
wife of the man who was supposed to have killed the mayor of Cork and was hung for it. The son, Sean McBride, became manager. The factory was registered under the name of Roebuck Jam Company Limited.
I think you'll find a strip among that thing at the top of the notepaper. His name on it, in your
print. Oh, I see, yes, yeah.
You're printed.
Right. I'm not sure which year it was that I went over there on holiday, but it was during the Sinn Féin trouble, and Mrs. Despard had been persuaded through the McBrides to go over to that side there, for the troops would often raid her house. Knowing who she was, they never took her, but avoid her by taking names of people in the house. There was a raid while I was there, and there had been another woman staying who wrote books. I was told she was suspect of putting codes in her stories. I never saw her as she left before I arrived. So they had let her slip through their net. They couldn't go back without someone. They took me. Mrs. Despard protested, saying I was a visitor on holiday and her ward, but they insisted, so she demanded to come with me. Now, as it was an open army van, Mrs. D was seen by many in the Dublin streets.
A mantilla flying in the air, you know, because they all knew her, you see.
So next day it was all in the papers. Mrs. D arrested. This, of course, soon reached Whitehall and she was never raided again. I myself was only kept 3 hours. I was told they contacted my employer at that time, who was a naval officer in the Admiralty, who I suppose explained I was on holiday. While I was staying in Roebuck House, I noticed through visitors and phone calls.
They used to go out a lot, so I answered it for them, you see.
That her name was never asked for or mentioned, so I went one day when they were out into their office and saw on the notepaper and forms that there were two names printed on, but no mention of Mrs. D's. In fact, it was, as I heard later, taken over by them, and she had to leave, and she went to Antrim, County Dublin.
I warned her of that, and she said to me, "My dear, you must see no evil. No, dear, you must not think of that. You would never see any evil in anybody." Got done. Twice I warned her over people like that.
People just took advantage of her.
And she wouldn't listen to us. Miss Reeves warned her over the housekeeper of the second house in Antrim, because they brought her over. The housekeeper came as her, you know, companion-like and dressed and that. And the chauffeur was chauffeur come Stuart and that, you see. And he came with the car, and all the time she was resting or writing or meeting people in the Minerva Club, they were off the car, out for the day. And once she had an important meeting, Miss Reed says, "Oh, where are they?" You know. So I said, "What's happened?" She said, "Well, your aunt's supposed to be, your granny at least, supposed to be at such and such a place now. And look at the time now." She said, where have they gone? I said, I don't know. See, they were going out and about on their own, drinking and doing, but she wasn't a drinker. Mm. There's a cutting in there telling the case of the bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And the judge said, he said, and did she drink all that? And did she smoke all those cigarettes? Knowing perfectly well, she was a non-smoker, non-drinker.
So she was just taken advantage of by...
Absolutely.
Yes. But I imagine she was very generous with her money anyway.
She did keep a control, well, somebody did, to see that her debts were, she was never in debt before.
Mm.
All those years, all that 36 years, she was never in debt.
Mm. Anyway, I'll finish off, shall I? She trusted all who came in contact with her, and in the end her staff and their friends made her a bankrupt. And of course, as there was by that time rumours of war, no civilians were allowed to cross over, so her friend and relations couldn't get over to help her, and she died over there at the age of 96. But she had done a wonderful lot for the workers, especially for women. She was a suffragette for many years and was often arrested, but I never saw this myself, for as a youngster, when they saw the crowd getting noisy and police arriving, I was taken away by Miss Mansell, as she didn't want to be arrested while I was in their care, nor while she ran the clinic.
No, see, she didn't want to be arrested with Granny. She thought, well, she's no good, both of them being arrested, so she used to scuttle, taking me with her. Wasn't that she was frightened of it, she wasn't.
I understand, yeah.
She could see the point of not...
I met quite a lot of well-known people at these gatherings. Many suffragettes came to our house at Nine Elms, prominent councillors, mayors, MPs, and of course suffragettes who fought with her for the vote. She was president of the Women's Freedom League. Therefore, I met some of the pioneer lady doctors, Dr. Garrett Anderson, Stokes, and many others. But Dr. Elizabeth Knight was her greatest friend. Dr. Knight was the on-sec of the Women's Freedom League and arranged many social meetings and garden parties to help the cause, besides her wonderful work in the hospitals. She had a nursing home at Brighton. I want to ask you about Dr. Knight. She was a medical doctor, was she?
Yes, medical.
I see. And she had money from Knight's soap, did you say?
She was the descendant from the Knight's soap, yes. She and her brother was the heir to it, you see, and she got part in it. Mm. But when she died, she left a lot of money. Mm. I think it tells you in that way. But I did have her cutting of her... will and that. She left it to her niece.
Did she?
Yeah. She has a niece.
What sort of person was she? Was she?
She always looked rather a stern sort of person, you know, disciplinarian and all that. Well, of course, being a medical, they have to. But she was really, from what I can understand, I only just met her at meetings and saw her and that. But she did help me. I remember her saying, I don't know, let's come in there. She came to my, or was there at the time, of my 21st birthday celebrations. And I remember her putting her hand on my shoulder and saying, Vera, what you've seen in 21 years, some would never see in a lifetime. Mm. And she said, you know, you ought to have a biography written of you. And of course, I was at that age. I said, oh, yes, that'd be lovely to see people reading it, you know. And not thinking of Granny's history, of course, of that stood.
Well, she was right, really, wasn't she?
Yes.
Mm. She was she a well-dressed woman? I mean... Was she well?
No, very plain, right, auntie.
Mm. Mm. But they were. She was.
And tidy, but.
She was her closest friend in England, you think, was she?
Yes, I suppose she would have been, yes. I can't live with anybody else.
Yes.
Because, of course, her real great friend was her own brother. They were devoted to each other as brother and sister, but as politics opposites.
Were they really?
She was a.
Labour, I think, wasn't she?
He was a militant and she was a pacifist, you see.
Oh, I see, yeah. In the war,
he was an army general and she didn't believe in war.
I see, yeah.
But they were very, very fond of each other, though.
Were they really? That's Mrs. Dr. Knight and her brother, you mean?
No, Mrs. Despard.
Oh, Mrs. Despard.
The general.
Sorry, yes.
No, Dr. Knight and I don't know them much at all.
Mm.
Except that she adopted a girl, too.
Did she?
Yes, Elsie. But,
she wasn't married, though, Dr. Knight, then?
Don't think so, no. No, I don't think so. They always say Dr. Elizabeth Knight. I don't know. I don't know much about her, really.
Mm. That's interesting that they were so close. Anyway, Mrs. Pankhurst and her two daughters I often saw at gatherings, and when Mrs. Despard held her yearly birthday party in the Caxton Hall, they all gathered to meet her. I've known her stand shaking people's hands so much that I've had to hold her arm up. It was so tiring. I know my arm ached
holding up hers, so I can imagine how she felt by the end of it. Regarding her regard for me, she never had a child of her own, so I can't say I felt she had motherly love for me. I never remember her hugging or nursing me, though she may have done so when I was very small. But she gave the love and protection she knew of, and as I had never had anything else, I didn't miss it. Miss Mansell, I recall,
Mansell,
I recall turning to for that, as a baby would to its nanny in its nursery. But I loved her in my way and would go to the ends of the earth to be with her. She taught me a motto. Here it is. I've tried to live like as best I can all my life, for I'm sure that is how she lived. It is, quote, I am a link in the golden chain of love that stretches round the world. I must keep my link bright and strong, so I will try to be kind and gentle to every living thing I meet and protect anything that is weaker than myself. She said this does not say only humans that are good and kind to me, it says anything that is weaker than myself. I'm sure that is the true meaning of this wonderful woman. She loved everybody and things that she met and never refused to help, not like so many societies I have come up across. They only help those who give them money and follow them, even in some churches. Did she like animals, actually?
Yes, she did.
Did she? Well, did she have animals?
Not birds.
Did she?
I always reminded of St. Francis, you know, St. Sissy, with the birds. I wish to think, oh, you're awfully like her. You should love birds.
What did she do? Did she have them in cages? Or?
No, wouldn't have anything caged. She and I were on the great campaign with Miss Bradish against wild birds. We were there in that
against
part
the caging
of
the wild birds, you mean?
Yes, caging wild birds.
I see.
I know Miss Bradish very well.
So what did she do? Did she just watch birds?
Yeah, she'd have them in a lot of trees and always say to make them, there's had plenty of trees and plenty of plants for the birds like to feed on. There's bushes and that. She had a very Scotch gardener who went with her in the country. He was
that's
a marvellous man.
Oxshott, is it? All?
Oxshott, yes. And Hall and Mayfield. You went through all three of them.
Oh, so these were houses. She had lots of houses, did she? I mean,
no, she had one and then moved on, you see.
I see.
That time.
So Oxshott was the first one.
Oxshott was the first I remember, she meant. Yes, it probably was, because she'd just come back from India, you see. And then,
Horam?
Earnshaw Cottage, it was called. Earnshaw was a well-known architect in those days, I believe, it seems to be.
Don't say E-A-R-N-S-H-A-W.
E-R-N, yes.
Yes.
Or E-A-R-N, I don't know, Earnshaw.
Yes. And then Horam, was it?
And then Horam, but I don't know the house of that.
Is that the place, Horam?
Horam Road. Horam Road, Sussex.
I see.
You hear of it on the television the other day, it was on there.
I see.
And then he had another one at Mayfield, Sussex, and that was the first convent I went to. But they rapped my knuckles, one of the nuns, and so I got angry, and I ran down the road to my house, you see, in Horam. The convent was at one end, and the kind of I ran away down there, and Auntie and Mabie were away, or what, in London, but they'd always got the Scotch gardener, so I ran to him. Well, he couldn't keep me, being a girl, he couldn't keep me there alone on my own. So he, what did he do now? He sent me to a cottage where an old couple were that came in daily woman. And he said, you look after her, and I'll write to Miss Mansell and tell her. So, of course, we hadn't got telephones in those days. So he wrote, and of course a while came keeper, we're coming, and Edie came down, was sent down to look after me until they came down. She don't let her go back.
Did she?
Yes. You see, I was already a pack of nerves through my birth and being dragged in and out. They wouldn't, they'd never have anything like that. So
what about gardening? You say she liked gardening, Mrs.
Yes, she was very, very fond of gardening, and a good planter, you know, knew how to organise it, what do you call it, plan it out.
So would she do, she did this personally herself?
No, well she might not do it, the Scotchman would actually plant it, but she designed it, they'd work it between them, and he was very good at that. Whether he came from a Scottish farmer, gardening family, I don't know, he's much older than me, but he worshipped me too. In fact, I used to call him Daddy Maitland, you see, I didn't know much about my daddy.
So he was
travelling abroad, you see, all the time, till later on.
Must have been very confusing for you as a child.
Yes, yeah, so the only daddy I knew was this daddy that, when he came, but I didn't know him as a youngster. And I think probably I knew him when I was about 12 years old.
She seems to like everything that's natural, everything that's country is fine.
Everything that was here, she loved everything like that. Pictures, anyone that could paint or art of anything.
Because she was a vegetarian as well.
Yes. I was brought up a strict vegetarian.
Were you?
In fact, I nearly lost my left arm when I went over to meet. And that was when I first went to, I went to boarding school up to Yorkshire and they gave me meat there. And I had a boom, a great boil come up my arm, and they thought it was a sting, and I went to St. Thomas's Hospital, I went all over the place, they couldn't find it out. And it went down in the end, but I was back at the convent, they said that sent me back saying it was better, and then if it came up, it could have, I had marks all over, I don't know, I've got one there now, you can see there, look.
Yes, yes. But anyway, she encouraged you to be a vegetarian.
And when it went right up here, they said, well, if it gets any nearer, because of being on the heart side, I was to have my arm off. But it didn't. Yes, so she brought us up very strictly. No, the maids could have meat, but they were to use separate pans. You know, so Miss Mansell was a vegetarian. She was taught from Auntie. And she was very strict.
What about discipline? Was Mrs. Despard very strict with you, or?
No. Miss Mansell was. Well, yes. She wasn't strict, but she was very particular. She trained the maids, you see, because these maids were only just little ordinary working class, came from all the working class, didn't know one thing from another. I mean, they weren't even used to tablecloths or anything like that. But she had Edie when she was only about 14, I think. 14 or 15, you see, and they grew up in our house and got trained like that.
Yes.
She trained them. Well, she was a marvellous woman, this Miss Mansell. She was a dentist, a doctor. I think she did qualify to be a doctor. But in those days, they were very fond of cutting a lot, and she said she didn't believe in the operations they did. So she dropped it all.
Can you describe that the house then in Battersea? I mean, you said it was like an Elizabethan house. It was a really old house, was it?
No, that was the Oxshott one.
Oh, that was Oxshott.
Oxshott was Elizabethan, yes. Nine Elms was just two little slum houses. At least one was a little tiny cottage, slum cottage. And then, they went in rows, you know how they used to in the old days. And then the end one was a little sort of house and a little bit more on for a fish shop. You see, and it had glass all the way round. And then, so she had the three, only it was only two, it was one and two, Curry Street. And so she had them all locked into one, she had the shop and the house, knocked into one, and the other house she had just a door in to go into the billiard room. That was the club room.
I see.
And then we had the stairs up to our room. And of course, right over the club room was her sitting room and my bedroom.
So what did she have there? She had a sitting room?
She had a fairly large sitting room over the club room. Then there was my bedroom. There was a long, long corridor, had windows all along, facing the gasworks. But in the corridor was a bathroom and lavatory, and then another staircase going up to two little rooms, which were the maids. We had two resident maids.
So it was like a flat almost, was it?
Yes,
really?
It was a flat, you see.
And what was in the shop then underneath?
That was the billiard room. That was their room that she used the clinic. She had a large covered one's end, used shut up, and that was the clinic in the morning. The other end she had another, rather like this chimney door, and you opened that up and there was an altar.
I see.
But that was all made by some local man who was a most wonderful carpenter. And that was all shut up.
What happened on Sundays then? That was opened up,
Sunday, wasn't
it?
And the other was all shut up, yes, and the chairs were all put out. They had a great, underneath was a great big room down in the basement, and that was the boys' carpentering room and that, and they stored all the chairs and that for the church all down there. That's and brought them up in the morning.
So it was almost, there was a church in there as well, in a way.
Yes, there was a church there on Sunday as well.
Extraordinary,
yes.
It was just about everything, wasn't it?
Yes.
But, what this clinic do then? Any mothers who had problems with their babies, they brought them along, did they?
Oh, no, this clinic was for anything that was going on. Children used to come in on their own.
Did they really?
Yes, they fell down the road, go to the clinic. Oh, nurse, look what I've done. You know, they come in and free themselves.
So it was free treatment.
Oh, free treatment, yeah.
I see. And was there a nurse there then, or what?
That was Miss Mansell. She was a trained nurse, see. Then when she left, and when I was older, and I'd gone to school and come back, then we had a trained nurse in St. Thomas's.
I see.
Because while I was away, the Blackham... what's the name of that? Cross and Blackwell's jam factory. It was a big jam factory there. And they took on pickling. They do now, but they just started. And a bottle burst in a girl's hand. And Mrs. Despard said she'd done a lot of travelling halfway around the world, but she'd never seen such a pretty child as this child Buckingham. Yes, Buckingham her name was. And when she heard that she'd, Ginny Buckingham, had cut her hand, she said, oh my goodness, bring her to me. And of course she came to the clinic and they did it out, but the nurse said, she said, oh no, she said, that wants, that, she said, that wants more attention, wants to go to the hospital. So she said, all right, nurse, take her to the hospital. And so from then onwards, she said, look here, in case there's more accidents at the hospital or in the docks, because men, we got the docks just about, we were right on the Thames. She said, if the, in case there's any accident or any other accident, I'm going to have a ward in St. Thomas's. And she had one private ward at St. Thomas's Hospital.
Did she really?
Despard, and Despard's bed and that. If anything was there, and she'd just say, they'd just ask, say, I've come from Despard's. If they came to nurse or whoever it was, and they took a card with them, they went straight in.
Remarkable, yes.
And Ginny, her hand was closed up for good, really. The muscle was cut and that. Still, it was saved. They said she might have died, otherwise it was bleeding so and that.
She got attached to individual children. What about these soup? What was it, soup kitchen, you said?
Yes, well,
was
that was
in the clinic as well?
Yeah, well, that was lovely. That was just by the church, like, oh, the chapel was there, and then they had a sort of bar here. Took it away afterwards and just had a tables, but there was an old bar there. I remember that from a baby. That must have been there before I came. And you served. Well, when I was off from school, I used to go and serve, and it was rather high up, well, high-ish. And they used to come, the kiddies used to come in with their pennies, you see, and they'd hand you up and you'd say, well, now, what do you want? You see, you had a choice, you see. There was soup, and there was a pudding, and there was savoury, vegetarians, all vegetarian, you see. She wouldn't even have that for these children. But they didn't seem to mind, as long as it was food. The mothers didn't mind as long as the kids got their food. And she sat there, and they'd say, well, what do you want? I went and served one little boy. And it was only just like that, back there, we couldn't see over the counter. And I said, yes, sonny, what do you want? He said, I put the soup, please, see. So he handed up the penny, and I kicked the penny, thinking, well, I'll keep it and give him his change, or he'll probably come back for the halfpenny, for the soup. I gave him his soup, and he got the soup under his arm, like just holding it like this, and he's still standing there. So I said, well, you've got your soup, sonny, what's the matter? I need change. He wasn't just me with the change. You'd have those peculiar things. Another one would come up, we got some, the pudding, we got custard, you see, and prunes or something like that. So he'd say, well, sonny, what do you want for your pudding? He said, or what are you going to have, pudding or whatever, savour or something? Ice is all up, please. So I turned to Miss Collins and her hands stuck. What's ice is all up? She said, that's custard. Yellow custard, see, because you didn't have any kind of custard like, you know, ices like we have now. It was all rather light ices, thick, you know. So that was ices all lot.
But she didn't give the soup away herself, Mrs. Despard.
No, we had soup, but we had all these helpers, Mrs. Del Banco, Mrs. Perotti, and Mrs. Tippett, and Mrs. And the two triplets. People like that would come and volunteer their service.
These were sort of rich women, or well-to-do
women,
weren't they?
Yes, they were suffragettes too, you see. They'd come down, give a day or half day to serve the dinners, and one or other would wash up, perhaps, as well as the maids.
But what happened then? The Women's Freedom League ran this place, did it? I mean, it was Women's Freedom League place, was it really? Or was it just Mrs. Despard's place?
It was her place.
Yes.
Whether they... I think they put funds to it, you know, collected funds for it.
Yes, yes.
Well, several places did, you see. They used to send a lot of money for it.
Yes.
You'll find it in those papers where they, the different people that gave it.
I imagine there must be a lot of people in Battersea now who remember all this.
Well, I doubt it. Because you see, they were all... No, I doubt it, because it was some years ago, you see. Mm. I mean, 1939 is when she died, and it only went on.
Yes, how long did it?
Closed down before then, you see.
Did it? I mean, it carried on after she went to Ireland, didn't it?
Oh, yes, yes, but you see, I had to close it down, because I found Miss Cole, something went wrong there, and I'd heard rumours, and I didn't take any notice. And then we had a Mrs. Andrews, didn't have so many staff then, we only had dailies in, Miss Cole didn't run his tour well. And this Mrs. Andrews came in daily, she said, oh, Miss, I said, what's all this rumour going on? Never heard such a thing. So she said, I'm afraid some of it's true, Miss. I said, oh, no, I said, can't be. She said, I'm afraid it is. What? And I asked somebody else, and I said, yes. And there was a baby had died. So I said, well, what's this about baby dying? Because they had a residential place up there afterwards when she moved.
Mm.
Our flat was turned into a residential for babies, you see.
Oh, I see.
And she previously had a residential at the other home, because she had another house first, before she went to number two, at, what's the name of it? Well, this corner of Edward Street and Nine Elms Lane, a big one there. But that was only just till she could get the other, you see.
Mm.
And she couldn't live there, so I think she was living at the Minerva Club or something. And. Mm.
Anyway, what was wrong?
And the baby apparently had had a fit and nursed, and I don't know, and or I don't know whether he'd had a fit or, but something about being put into too hot a water or something. She always bathed the curls herself.
So it wasn't.
And she called the doctor in, which was a council doctor, and this council doctor was edging and abiding her, and he didn't really inspect.
Yeah.
And when I went there, then I went there to stay. And I pooh-poohed that, and I didn't think anything of that. But then I went there to stay one night, and the place was rather full, so I said, all right, I'll have a bed in the nursery. And there were nursery children there. And I suddenly smelt gas in the night. I thought, crikey, whatever's this? And she'd got my room next door, you see, because the nursery was our sitting room, you see, that one. And Mrs. Despard had a gas stove there, and they'd taken that away, you see, with the beds and that. But they'd taken it away, and they'd left it. You see, there's the gas thing.
Yes.
Of course, that's a safety thing, but theirs was the ordinary one that juts out there and with the handle, and they hadn't had it sealed off. And someone had swept the room, knocked it with a broom, and it was coming out.
Mm. Mm. So in the end, it had to be closed down for health.
The children. For health. Well, then another time, she pushed me out of the bed. She was so drunk and got in it herself.
Mm.
So I thought, oh my gosh, you'd do that to a baby if that had been a baby in that or child in that bed, because all the babies were in cots, you see. So I forfeited it to someone else on the committee who I knew, Miss Rigors, who was a great friend. I said, I don't know what to do, Miss Rigors. She said, oh, well, I'll have to see. So I left it to her. I thought, well, she's on the committee. So then there was a Mrs. What's her name? Not Perotti, somebody, Mrs. A local councillor came to me and she says, oh, Miss Foley, she says, do you know there's been a report, she said, and I don't know where it's come from, she said, that about Miss Cole and the condition of this. Oh, and I took Mrs. Delbert, I said, Mrs. Rigall, upstairs to the nursery. I've been looking round and I've turned the nursery mattress up and there's all mildew underneath. And the sheets are all stained and everything, she hadn't done a thing.
So, in fact, it had to be closed down, did it?
So I said to her, I said, you can't have this running with that tablet outside. I said, I'm not going to stand here and let my aunt have that under disgrace. See? So it was closed down. So anyway, this woman came to me and she said, oh, I've heard such awful things like that. So I said, well, I'm the one that started it. Holy. I suggest you can go back and tell them.
Anyway, I imagine that the public authorities were beginning to set up places by that time, weren't they? And they could take it over in a way, couldn't they?
Well, very slow, you know, it was a long time. I don't know what they did in the end.
Was there any political work there? I mean, were there any meetings, political meetings or anything like that?
I don't think there was only meetings just for people to see the clinic. I don't think there was any political meetings, no, or even suffragette meetings or anything there.
It was just purely welfare.
Council meetings for the welfare, yes. Something like that, you know, for the welfare only. Mind you, she used to have small sort of gatherings of political people up in her room with this table, you see.
Yeah.
I used to go up to our room upstairs, but that was nothing to do with it.
Just private thing.
Actual, yes, clinic.
Mm. Mm. But you've got a marvellous memory of all sorts of details which might be lost, you know, unless you record it all down. Anything else about her that really sticks in your mind? Mrs. Despard, that is, that you'd like to remind me of? You talked about birds and gardening and eating habits and her dress and how she was with children. How she wasn't in class prejudiced at all.
No, she wasn't.
Done all those things, haven't we? Talked about all those.
She's been among all the richest. I mean, she's been among the princes and princesses of India and, you know, ridden on elephants and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
She's been down to the lowest of slums.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
We did have, being next to the coal light and gas company, right at the side of the house, we had, I think it was 19, well that could soon be traced because the building is still there, 1920 something, 25, 26, it's in the building the number, worked in the stonework, you know, in the brickwork of the building. They were improving on the gas works and they were making more gas because the place grew, as everybody knows, and they were having the coal, the gas made out of the coal and the coal coming down, and it was coming out in the open. See it falling down into their bins, whatever they were, down the shaft. And we couldn't open our windows that side. Because it used to blow right in and got grit everywhere. Edie used to dust and do, and it would grit everywhere. And it got that the people round about were dying of it on their chests and getting on the chest. That's why I was never allowed in there long. I used to stay there and then go off to school or go off to the country, you see. And I remember one. So she complained, and a lot of the others complained to the gasworks or to the council or the government, I believe to the MP. And they gathered down and had a meeting and asked the councillors to come. And yes, it was an MP, and he'd been over the gasworks and seen that. And he said, I remember him saying in the club room then we had the meeting, and he said, you know, he said, your gasworks are growing. That was one of the healthiest parts of London at that time because it was gas, coke, or gas fumes, coke fumes, combined with river air. You never got any of the fevers they used to get there. You never saw a fever band down there, not once. Very rarely you even saw measles, you see. And they said, well, funny, all combined like that, all in the slums and, you know, small families and growing contacts and that, and yet you never saw all these fever bands you see dashing about.
What were fever bands? I've never heard of those.
That was a period, you see, was just dying out when I was there. But, I mean, you used to see these white vans going off, taking children, rushing them off to the hospitals, because there'd be typhoid or there'd be, what's the other thing?
not cholera.
No, typhoid people, and,
yes, or tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis and all that sort of thing, yes. And then suddenly it started coming again, tuberculosis chiefly. And and then they suddenly started, elderly people or men, even working in the factory, would start getting it. And they thought, well, that's funny, it's getting on their lungs. And it was cancer too, and they didn't know so much about it. And this man said, he said, yes, he said, you've grown your factories to make more gas, but the river hasn't grown any bigger, and you're making more
gas for the amount of river.
I remember his words.
Yes.
And he says, you've got to consume your own dust.
Mm.
And there's a great big building there now, with this date on, the date that they passed the bill, they've got to consume their own dirt.
These fever, getting back to these fever vans, so were they horse-drawn?
Yes.
And
yes.
What, were they taking the children to the hospital?
To the hospital, yes.
When they got fever?
When they got this awful thing, because it would catch, you see, so quickly in the fever.
But were they different from other vans then? I mean, why were they called fever vans? Were they?
Well, they were white, you see, and they were, yes, rather like buses, only all covered in. Rather high, you know, they weren't just ambulances like we know nowadays, and rather box sort of things on wheels.
So what, they have beds in them, or just one bed
in
them?
I suppose they did, or stretchers, I don't know, I've never seen inside them.
Mm.
To just see these white things, there's a fever van going by.
Mm. That's extraordinary, because you see that's completely gone now.
Yes, oh yes, because yeah. The fever's gone for one thing. Yeah. The fevers don't go.
One thing I want to ask you, was Mrs. Despard concerned about your career? I mean, did she, and your education, did she, what did she do about that?
Well, she wanted me to have a good education. She sent me to some of the highest schools. This one up in Yorkshire was run by an Italian order, the Assumption. And the nuns were all very, very highly educated, but very open-minded. Now there, I had a nun take me to that factory that I told you about.
Did you? Mm.
They were one of the first to start social classes as a separate subject in the curriculum. Mm. And they wrote to Auntie and asked her, and of course she said, oh yes, do, and she gave them some ideas of what to look for, and how they, she taught them really what to do, you know, about it.
But she was interested in your education,
oh, yes,
was she,
yes.
Mrs. Despard?
But when it came to a career, she said, well, it's up to her to choose. First she thought I might be a vet, because I was so fond of animals, I could almost do anything with them, you know. And I said, yes, I'd like to, but I said, no, Auntie, I said, I can't understand their language. Mm. You see, I felt I couldn't get nearer to them to help them.
Mm. So then what did she
say? So then I said, but I would like to be a nurse. Mm. And of course, that was in the blood, because we've had it for generations on my mother's side, see.
Yes.
So she said, oh, that's only natural. She'd got a niece in St. Thomas's, sister matron St. Thomas's, Sister Harley. And she said, oh, well, that's only natural. So she told the others, and they said, oh, well, if she wants to be one of us, you know. Mm. They didn't mind. They were rather glad.
Oh, one thing I want to ask, what about birth control? Did she promote birth control at all? Because a lot of women at that time were beginning to promote birth control.
Yes, that I don't know.
Because that wouldn't fit with her Catholic side,
no,
would it, really?
No,
I just wondered.
I've never heard her say anything about that.
I see.
I don't think it had got that advanced, you know.
But you
probably only just suggested among the men, the doctors, you know.
Mary Stopes came, you see, she was
a doctor,
person.
Yes. It might have been among the doctors.
Yes, but you don't remember it being an important thing anyway.
I remember Mary Stopes, I'll tell you why. She was near ears, nose and throat specialist, wasn't she?
Mm.
And she came to deal with me because I had tropical catarrh. And made me laugh because I remember going there. I must have been in the 20s or so. And we went in the hall in her place, I don't know where it was now, Hampstead or somewhere. And people were all sitting round in chairs with bowls and powder. We were told to sniff this up, you see. So I said, that's no good to me. So they said, why? Because you see, what their idea of catarrh was to be thick and heavy and have it all on your chest and that. Whereas tropical catarrh is, you're throwing it out all the time. You're worn out from sleep. And my eyes were watering and my ears itched, you see. So I said, no, doctor. I said, I want somebody to stop it, not to make me sneeze. And I remember all the patients around roaring with laughter. And she never got any further than that. When the clinic was over, she had me in her own private room because she was a friend of Granny's. She said, now what's this? She said, I said, well, I've got tropical catarrh. Like my father. And so she said, oh, well, I'll have to leave it. Then when she saw Auntie, she thought I was putting her leg, you know, didn't want to do it. And Auntie said, no, that is it. She said, that is the trouble. She can't read or anything because her eyes keep watering.
Did she encourage you to read a lot in
I was a bad reader. Mm. And so on my holidays, she'd get me and try and teach me, but I couldn't. Well, there was one thing happened to me when I was a youngster. When I was 4 years old at Oxshott, we had a long kitchen. Well, it appeared long to me, it may not have been. They had a long refectory table, you see. And this man, Maitland, came in and we would, I think we'd been playing out in the garden, he'd been playing with me, and he came running in, because they called me in, so he thought the only way to get her in is to go, and we're playing catch, and I was trying to catch him. So he ran into the kitchen, and I ran in, and one of the maids had left the oven door open, just taking something out of the oven, and they had the iron door, in those days they're all iron, you know, and I slipped on the fender, and fell, and the point of the oven went in my head, here, I've still got the dent now, and really, went right in the frontal, you see. And since then, I've always had a gathering inside. Every now and again, if I read too much, not so much now, but when I was a child, if I went like that, read too much, something tightened me up like that, and I couldn't see or think or anything. It wasn't a headache, it was just a tightening. No pain, just... And I think that stopped me wanting to read.
I see.
I just Then I said to Auntie, when she said, but you must read. I said, no, I see too much in natural life. I don't want to see it on print.
Quite
clean,
but
quite a good
thing to say, yeah. Yes.
But since then, I was a slow developer.
Mm. But she was patient with you and sympathetic.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, she realised it probably was my guitar, you see. And there again, you see, she left it to Miss Mansell. Miss Mansell, being so hating this idea of a knife and that, she wouldn't let me see a doctor.
Mm.
So it healed up naturally, and so it must have contracted something inside.
What about Mrs. Despard's relationship with local wives, working men's wives? Did she get on well with them?
Oh, yes, yes, very well, yes.
And did she go visiting their homes at
all? Oh, yes, she went right in if they wanted her in, yes.
Did she? And they'd ask her in sometimes?
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes.
Only if she was could help them. She wouldn't go just visiting for the sake of it.
Mm.
But if if someone was ill or their husband was ill and they wanted, they'd say, oh, go out and ask Miss Mansell to come. And of course Miss Mansell would if she was there. Or otherwise they'd say, oh, well, she isn't there. Well, tell Edie. And Edie would say, oh, Miss Mansell isn't here. I'll tell Mrs. Disparcy. And she'd go out and tell her. She'd say, oh, isn't Mamie in? Oh, well, I'll come. And she'd go down, you see.
Mm.
She said, now, can I do anything to help you? I'm afraid Miss Mansell isn't here, you see. And if it was anything she'd do, and meanwhile she'd have a chat and talk and say, that's all right, dear, that's all right, I'll tell Miss Mansell directly. She comes, she'll come with the ointment or whatever it is. You see?
Mm.
And that would be that.
What about women in childbirth? And did she help on that?
Well, she didn't know a lot about that, no. She left that to Miss Mansell, you see, all the nurses.
Yes.
She'd always got the basket of scent there. I don't think she knew the first thing about the birth.
Did she really?
I don't think so.
Did she really?
It never came to her, you see.
No, I see. Because she's a great champion of women, you'd think she'd
know everything.
Oh,
yes, yes. But that didn't... well, maybe wrong, but I never imagined her being anything like that, having no...
I was really wondering, I mean, in a way, you see, I mean, the women's movement is all linked up now with...
Oh, we're now in advance, you
yes,
see.
I mean,
but in those days it was still rather harsh.
Was it? I mean, she never talked about this side of life at all to you then?
No. Because that was the thing, one of my aunts, well, thought was bad. She said, you know, she'd never had any children of her own, and she'd never had this and that. And, well, one of my uncles, I should say, and he wanted to find out if I knew anything. And one of my other aunts came in, just as he was sort of asking questions. She says, look, she said, George, it's none of your business. She said, well, he said, yes, but she's never had any children. She wouldn't teach her that. She says, no, but she's been brought up on a farm and she's been brought up in a clinic. And I said, yes, I know a jolly sight more perhaps than some of them. You see, I was brought up naturally, you see.
Yes,
yes. So, I've never been told about the, anything.
Mm. Did Mrs. Despard work sort of together with local school teachers at all? I mean, did she work with the schools at all? Did she get much
help? I don't
know
about working with them. She'd be she'd be interested in things, and if there was anything wrong, they'd come to her and say, look, we can't get the council to do so and so. And she'd say, well, give me all the details you want and I'll write them a letter.
She's
got
so
a power like that, she would
she
like
She could actually
to
get the council to do things.
Go between, you know.
What about John Burns? Did she have anything to do with John Burns much?
Oh, yes. They were quite friendly.
Were they?
What's his name, that used to live at Battersea? The one that did the public parks.
I don't know. Not George Lansbury.
Lansbury, I mean?
Well, Lansbury was the Labour man.
I think that's the one. Didn't he have a house in... Clapham or somewhere? And
could be, I don't know. Anyway, she had a lot of politicians around.
Yes,
again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes, I saw all those people.
Yes.
Is that Brown thing?
Keir Hardie?
Oh, Keir Hardie, yes, yes.
Well, you've seen everything, haven't you? I mean, you've...